Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Unsprawling Podcast, specifically another episode of the RCG Recap. This is day two of what is turning out to be a very, very long hearing. I think we've got over 800 people signed up now, something like 180 different panels of speakers coming to City Hall to share their thoughts on the potential of the RCG rezoning of the city. So I'm excited to have a few different guests today. We'll start with Dave Barrett joining us.
Hey, nice to be here.
And we've got Steve Bentley.
Hey there, great to be on the show. I'm usually interviewing folks for the Climate Lens, so it's not often I'm on the other side of this. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. And then we've got Inam Teja too.
Hello everyone, great to be on the show.
Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting conversation. I want to talk about, I mean, this is day two, and you kind of think, I don't know, I feel like day two felt a little bit different than day one, especially in the crowd's sense. Day one was very exciting. We had, you know, both sides had their rally, and there was a lot of hooting and hollering. The overflow was filled up. Everybody was clamoring to get into council chambers. Then I showed up this morning to City Hall. There was no lineup. They did have a sign that said, speakers on this side enter through this line, kind of giving priority to speakers. And then, they had spectators, to line up on the other side. They had this set up, and I asked the security, I said, is there still room in the council chambers, do you think? And they're like, oh yeah, yeah. And I go in and it was almost empty. Day two, at City Hall, the crowds were less kind of exciting, less busy. But that doesn't mean the speakers weren't. So we're going to start with some highlights here. I want David to start with some of his highlights he had.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I'll disclose that I work at a post-secondary institution, you know, in Calgary. One of the things that I think, having been involved in housing advocacy, planning, you know, land use stuff for a little while, generally, we haven't seen really a big, you know, interest and engagement from student populations. That's really, really shifted in this, you know, and credit to the students' unions for mm-hmm. mobilizing a lot of this. Credit to community groups for actually trying to activate those groups as well.
Yeah, Urban CSA, there's a shout out for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I plan to, if I have a chance to talk to council, they're definitely on my list to get a shout out to. And I think, you know, it really has to drive home that it's not necessarily me that's going to be affected by these changes, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, nearly as much as many of the students and the generation younger than myself that are going to be affected by these changes. They're not going to be. And I think the students are grappling and understanding this, that this is not going to be rapid, perhaps not even rapid enough for those currently in post-secondary. But it's a necessary step to try to, you know, adjust the course. So I really think that engagement from input from post-secondary students and students' unions is huge. I don't think that can be understated. And there's some really, really, really articulate speakers today, coming from post-secondary institutions. So,
yeah. One of those speakers I want to highlight is Joseph Nguyen of the MRU Student Union. I just thought he was fantastic. He was able to share briefly a lot of personal experiences from the students at MRU about their experience looking for housing. And like you said, David, this is a long-term solution that we're looking at here. This isn't going to benefit the student who's even in their first year of university. This is a long-term plan for the city's sustainability. We're going to come back to that sustainability in a second, but first I want to hear from Steve about your highlights.
So I look at it as from the yay side, I think something that is encouraging and positive, or the yes, I'm saying yay or nay, so the yes vote or the no vote. Mm-hmm. On the yes vote side, I like that folks are talking about policy and are talking about how this impacts people, and it's not about pointing fingers at the other side, at the no folks. We're not, I don't even know if I've heard the word NIMBY today yet. Maybe I missed it. It's possible. But I think, you know, going into this, I was hopeful that the yes side would be, even keeled on that and not looking to throw gasoline on any fires. And on the flip side of that is the no side or the nay side. I don't think they do themselves any favors when it comes to, coming with just under-informed arguments, under-informed positions where there are answers to those questions. Probably a lot of people in the audience could answer those questions. And then, of course, I mean, at least twice, almost two speakers in a row were mentioning a global conspiracy. And I feel like when you're doing that, you're doing your whole side a disservice. And so those are two things that sort of jumped out at me. We'll see how it all progresses.
Yeah. It's definitely a wait and see thing. And I do want to say, for clarity's sake, everybody on this call is saying yes, to RCG upzoning. This isn't like a news panel. This is us talking about how we feel about what is happening. And I'll also say, I think it's great that everybody from any perspective is able to speak in front of council. I think that's one of the beautiful things about what's going on here this week and probably next week, it's looking like, is that people are able to come out. And it's great to see we've got this engagement from people from all different perspectives. Inam has a few different perspectives you'd like to highlight as well.
Yeah, I think today I heard a couple really fantastic kind of themes that stuck with me. The first one being the it's fine theme. There was a speaker who was talking about how this whole process had been reminding them of the secondary suites debate that we had a few years ago in Calgary, and how a lot of the same arguments about neighborhood character and parking and the concerns about changing too fast were all raised and debated, and then secondary suites passed and it was fine, and there hasn't been a massive catastrophe of neighborhoods denigrating because of secondary suites. What it's brought is more neighbors, it's kind of echoed with a few of the other speakers talking about how, there's such a big fuss about this, but really it's fine. The kind of second theme that I thought two speakers in particular made a really great case for were the fiscal conservative, the fiscally, financially responsible case for zoning. And I thought specifically Alex McCall and Greg Miller did a really fantastic job of laying out why, the Conservative Party of Canada has generally been in support of these kinds of things, and why from a financial standpoint it's more efficient and it's does more with less when it comes to taxation. So I thought those were two things that really stuck with me from today.
Yeah, I think those are great to highlight. I think everybody from every perspective can find something to find to think is great about this plan, whether you're big into fiscal conservatism or you just want to get houses built, or it's a personal thing, you like the style or whatever, right? I think there's a lot of things to get excited about RCG over. Something else that I know, Inam, you brought up to me is that people say they support density, and they kind of give all of these extra little caveats. I think that's probably the thing that we're hearing most from the people who don't support RCG, or at least don't support RCG as it's currently being presented.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kind of perspective is like the nodes and corridors, or go build a community somewhere else that, carries that level of density for people. Do you want to kick off that conversation? And then I think this will kind of bleed into what we're going to talk about with sustainability as well.
Yeah, totally. I think we heard from a lot of you know, very reasonable people who are speaking opposed today, talking about how, you know, I recognize there's a need for density in our city. We do need more homes. There is increased demand. But I think council needs to find the right place for density instead of upzoning everything. And you mentioned it. It's nodes and corridors. It's sticking to LAPs. It's just putting density in the inner city. Some people talking about just putting density in the green field. And, you know, I think there's some merit to the idea of targeted density. But when we're in a housing crisis and when we need to be, you know, taking drastic action, we can't be waiting around for every community to just say, hey, not here, hey, not here, hey, not here. And that's what happens when you say, okay, we're going to do density. Let's put it here. Whoever's there is going to say no. And then we'll say, okay, fine, let's put it here. Whoever's there is going to say no. And so the most fair way to do it is to say everyone has the potential for density, and then we'll let, you know, demand decide where it actually goes.
Yeah.
And could I just pipe in there too? Like, I think one of the things that often gets, you know, missed in this approach, the nodes and corridors approach, well, and Nam, you're much more qualified to talk probably about the planning side of it, but, you know, it's been around for decades, right? It's really been around for decades. It has been found in, you know, the last 10 years or so to actually have substantial negative health effects, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on where it's, you know, if you're building it along 16, not just to mention, you know, desirability, like who wants to live on the side of Bow Trail, which one of the speakers, I think, against was actually commenting, saying somebody, you know, there's a building that went up alongside Bow Trail and maybe people don't actually want to live there. There's also a few other, you know, health and air quality related pieces there that I think often get overlooked when it's, you know, just push people out to that edge or that periphery, that node and corridor approach. So just wanted to flag that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I mean, it's something that it will be an ongoing conversation on this specific kind of series of the podcast, as well as the podcast generally, is where are we building and why and how is that good or how is that bad? But let's take kind of the environmental perspective. Steve, you talked about this fantastically today on one of the panels. Can you kind of give us a brief overview of the environmental case for this upzoning?
Sure. And it's worth mentioning that there are people within the climate community that are concerned about existing green spaces being impacted by this vote. But to begin with, you know, before I even talk about any of this, there is a wildfire evacuation underway, they're at least approaching. I'm not sure where it's at right now, but right here in Alberta, there's a town that's facing an evacuation in April, a wildfire evacuation. So this is just to remind people that, that this climate change thing is no longer an intellectual pursuit. This is something that is real and scary. And so what I said to council is, one of the first and most basic things a city can do to start getting in line on getting towards a climate smart place that's reducing emissions and that's starting to do the right things is to look at where you're building and what you're building and how you're building it. And Calgary, I've called it sprawl city since time out of mind, because for a long time, that was all we knew how to do. That was all we really knew where you could build was further and further on the outskirts. And by doing that, I mean, number one, you're wiping out our wetlands. And if you're wiping out our wetlands, like one of the wetlands are it's this amazing system that humans have not been able to beat when it comes to defending us against floods. You've got these great big roots that draw up all of that water. And we've wiped out quite a lot of them. And we just keep, we keep saying, and I saw a number of people over the last couple of days just like, yes, just keep building out there. Don't interfere with our neighborhoods. And that's one of the big problems. Of course, the other problem is you're putting more Calgarians on the outskirts of town. That means there's more of them driving in with vehicles, more emissions coming out. And it's just something that we as climate change just becomes more and more of a factor in our lives. This is one of the no-brainers for a city. We need to finish. It's kind of like finishing your plate when you're a kid before you can go and have your dessert. You got to finish your plate. We got to finish the communities that we have and build them up before we think about always going outwards like this. And then the other thing I just mentioned is, you know, there was a lady that I know. She's actually from the Calgary Climate Hub as well, and she was coming at it from the no side. And you know, what I would say there is, I mean, at the risk of putting out a bad pun, she's not seeing the forest for the trees, because if you're going to be worried about those existing green spaces, ultimately there's some trade-offs when we look at fixing these historic things that we've built improperly, or at least could have always been done better. And I will stand shoulder to shoulder with anybody who wants to green this city up. And that's the other thing I said today. And furthermore, you want to start putting panels on things? I'm right there with you. Let's do it. But you know, what I would say is there's some people that are concerned about the fact that they've got panels in their yard and they don't want that to interfere, you know, any new buildings to interfere with all that. First of all, you don't know that something's going to come in beside you and interfere with your panels. In fact, it's increasingly likely that it becomes clear to me that it's likely that that's not going to be the case. It's just a small amount over a long time that's going to see any change at all. And so it's a thing where we've got to find a way to take these big steps together. And you know, from panels to greening the city, I mean, love to hear everybody saying it. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it.
There's a few things that you touched on there that I want to highlight and maybe clarify for people who don't really know exactly what we're talking about when we talk about density and when we talk about this RCG rezoning of the city. RCG, I mean, when people are worried about this and saying we need to put density by the transit stations, you might be thinking, wow, like, are we talking about towers here? We're talking about 11 meter tall maximum buildings that are contextual as well. My understanding is they've got to take into account the roof lines of the buildings around them so that they're not completely overshadowing them. And so if it's being built between two bungalows, that might change the height requirements somewhat. That's my understanding of it. And so we're not talking about towers. So the density really is not that dense. I walk by townhomes all day. They're not scary. They're not overshadowing.
Right.
I also...
Some of them are quite nice.
Some of them are very nice. And we can already tear down these bungalows in these neighborhoods. I happen to live in one of those 1960s bungalows. We can tear those down and replace it with a large two-story home that has more lot coverage than this bungalow, that has a taller roof than this bungalow, that has a third story, which this bungalow doesn't even have a second. And so I really want to highlight that the density is not that dense. I also want to highlight that a lot of these construction projects, a lot of these RCG buildings that are being built, whether they're duplexes, row homes, or just a new single family home, they keep the trees. Like, a lot of them have chosen to keep the trees, because why would you not want to keep the fully grown trees? It saves you from planting new trees, right? Is that something that you guys have seen as well as you're like going out and about?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the perspective of looking at the new houses, yeah, they're not scary. Most of them have trees. Most of them are, you know, well landscaped, fit in with communities, and are, you know, generally additive to the flavor of a community. And I think, you know, to Steve's point, like, the backbone of a healthy ecological system is not private trees and manicured lawns, right? It's these wetlands that surround our city. It's some of the natural spaces and parks that we have. It's not a you know, Kentucky bluegrass and a tree that doesn't even match what's natural to our environment. So I think some of the environmental concerns are you know, largely blown out of proportion.
Or misplaced, or maybe mischaracterized. David looked like he had a thought. So I got to hear what you've got to say.
No, I got a couple of thoughts. One, I love that you referenced Kentucky bluegrass and you know, that just being, you know, misnamed as green or as a, you know, ecological, you know, having ecological value, and in actual fact, it's quite the opposite. So I guess on the tree front, you know, nothing, as you were saying, Alex, if somebody tore down your house now and built a large single detached, there's nothing to prevent the trees from being removed at that point either.
Yeah.
So no. this really does nothing for private trees, and the city has bylaws already existing, you know, and whether or not they're enforced appropriately, that's a, you know, a whole different discussion, but there's already tree bylaws for city owned trees and, you know, existing trees. So I don't really buy that argument. I sympathize. I also enjoy the shade, but we also, you know, this is a bit of a tired argument, but we live on the prairies where there was no natural tree cover. So we've added everything that's here, you know, more or less. We've added everything that's here, and in the city. So we can continue to do that. And we should continue to do that if that's a priority. But, you know, there's already existing policies in place to help protect those city-owned trees.
And I have heard that it's important to make sure that you're not relying on private trees to solve your climate crisis.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, the other thing is I'm sort of repeating myself a little bit here, but I'm inclined to take everybody at their word that they really love these trees and these green spaces. And, you know, there's quite a lot of time until the next election. Is there any interest amongst all these people that are talking about this to push council for a great big tree program between now and the next election to dovetail with this deep desire we all have for more green? I'll take it. I'll help it. I'd love to see it happen. Now the question is everybody sincere with their love of green spaces and trees, or is it a tactic? And for some people, it most likely is. But you know, I feel like whenever possible, I'll just take somebody at their word and say, hey, you want to go and get some trees planted? We're going to be planting trees. We have a tree policy coming out in early May. I've just barely been touching on the emails as they come through. But independent of all of this, there are people in the Calgary Climate Hub that are trying to get trees planted. So you know, I'll just put that out there to all who are listening. Let's take everybody at their word and say that that's one thing the city council heard during this time is Calgarians like trees.
Yeah.
And just to the city's credit, I believe it might have ended a couple years ago, but they did for a long time have a city funded and supported tree program where they provided it to private landowners if they promised to upkeep it for a certain number of years. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember if it was called branching out or something like that, but there was an existing policy program in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
David, sorry, Steve, we gotta keep going. We have a schedule here. We all got to get to bed. I briefly want to hear from David, about, why not sprawl out? Can you give us like a quick 2-minute reasoning? Why not keep sprawling?
Yeah. And I think Steve covered off a lot of this and Enam's touched on it, I think, before too. It's not sustainable. You know, when we're talking, there's a lot of arguments, you know, that really get me going about impervious surfaces, lot coverage changes with RCG. What's lost in that is scope, right? I'm a geographer by background. When you're looking at the plot scale, there may be some changes in surface runoff, the water that leaves that plot, absolutely. Less so if you've got 4 units or more, because then they're required to actually have on-site stormwater management. But when you compare that scale to, you know, the addition of impervious surfaces in the form of roads, in the form of other services, and then the carbon impacts of driving out to those, you know, greenfield communities, it just doesn't compare. So I again, you know, to steal Steve's, you know, very apt line about seeing the forest through the trees, I think that's really it. We've got to remember that there's a scale piece to this, right? We're not talking your plot, my plot, you know, your brother's plot. It's our city as a whole. And those impacts are way bigger than what happens on an individual lot. Not to dismiss that we should be doing the best we can for, you know, I'm absolutely behind improving stormwater management through, you know, green infrastructure, if you will, rain gardens, rain barrels, trying to really limit the impacts of those changes to surface runoff. But when you start looking at all the infrastructure and the impervious services that are added, when you're talking about growing at the edge of the city, it just completely overshadows the changes that RCG would have.
Maybe to take a step back even, because I think a lot of people maybe tuning in for the first time might not be thinking about why we're talking density versus sprawl, right? It's you know, people are like, oh, like what does one have to do with the other? And the point is that our city is growing. We need more homes. And the decision is not to put density out of nowhere. It's, are we going to be building homes in areas that already have infrastructure and we've already, you know, connected them to transit in their existing communities? Or are we going to put the new homes at the edge of the city where we might have to encroach into farmland or wetland or grasslands? And so it really is a decision that our city has to make. And we've set targets to do, you know, 50-50, and we're nowhere close to that. You know, we grow at the edge of our city way more than we're growing within our city's limits. And the RCG hearing is really about enabling more growth within our city's current footprint. And so, you know, when someone says, oh, yeah, you know, RCG buildings, that's going to be more people, that's going to be, you know, more pollution, you're going to have bigger lot sizes. It's like, well, yes, we're going to have a larger built form. We're going to have more people. But it's not compared to zero. It's compared to what would the impacts be at the edge of the city if we were to put that house there. And so I think it's an important trade-off to remember that we're not comparing the impact to zero. We're comparing the impact to, you know, the cost of the sprawl.
And could I just add one other line to that too?
Go quick, and then I'm going to go to Steve, because I cut him off before, but it looks like we're continuing with this conversation.
Totally. I just wanted to add, like, it's a discussion. It's rephrasing perhaps what Nam said. It's looking at, do we grow into the into undisturbed area or critical areas such as agricultural land, or do we grow within the already ecologically disturbed area, the already built area? So thanks.
Yeah, great.
And I'll jump in just really quick because you know, there's one of the parts of this that gets unheard all the time, and I mentioned it briefly in my talk to council, is just that a lot of these densified communities are just a nicer place to live. You've got better bike stuff going on, you've got better transit going on, you've got better sort of community stuff going on, and it's just more vibrant. And it's a great place to open up a business, and people feel like they can just walk around, and it's a thing that we don't talk about, but qualitatively it's nice. Like, think about Marda Loop. Marda Loop's a nice example of where they did a little bit of city building there, and you can just walk around and walk to a pub and walk to the grocery store. And I mean, that's my playbook. That's the stuff I like. And I feel like once you live in that, you spend time in that, you start to think that, hey, this is pretty nice. And there's a good reason for that. They've been doing it forever in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they used to always do things, was this.
Yeah, well, and the community was more based around the people, right? You hear in almost every conversation talking about this upzoning, you hear us talking about cars. When we're talking about housing, instead of talking about people, we're talking about cars. And Steve and I had a conversation. We're both car-free. We were having a conversation. And I had a conversation with a gentleman on the bus this morning on my way to City Hall. I was chatting with this guy on the bus, and he told me, he's like, yeah, I just got rid of my car 2 years ago. And he said, it's been weird, but he says, it's really nice. You know, we get to look people in the eyes. And I think that when we step out a little bit, and density can help us do that because we're kind of pushed a little bit and encouraged a little bit to interact with our community a little bit more. I think when we step out of that, we end up seeing that the world is not such a scary place. That there are beautiful people in your community, beautiful people who come from all over the place, beautiful people who live in different types of housing, different living situations, different relationships. They might be alone, they might have family, they might live with a grandparent. People live in all sorts of ways, in all sorts of housing. And I think when we step out of our little metal boxes and interact with our neighborhood, which that density fosters that ability to do so, then I think the world becomes a little bit more real, right? Maybe we can touch some native grasses rather than Kentucky bluegrass when we do that. I want to hear about the general vibes so far as we go into, I guess, the last 80% of the public hearing, maybe. Enam, we'll start with you. How are you feeling about how this public hearing is going so far?
I mean, there's a lot of care and empathy that I think has been shown. Some of it is really directed at, you know, communities in particular. And some of it is directed at like a broader idea of Calgary. And I think that second piece resonates more with me. You know, there's a lot of people who you know, and I appreciate that they love where they live and they don't like to see it changed or they feel threatened by change. It's encouraging that they care about their community so deeply. But I think having this broader sense of a Calgary community and everyone within Calgary as being part of that community that we need to take care of is something that I think a lot of the people who are, you know, pro this rezoning is kind of that perspective that they take in. And I really appreciate that broader perspective, that broader compassion, and extending that love, you know, to every Calgarian and not just to the people who are already in my specific RC1 community.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge. And I appreciate the importance of broadening our scope of empathy a little bit. And also appreciating that the people who are showing up because they care, because it's something that matters to them on one level or another. David, we'll go to you next for your final thoughts here and your vibes going into the rest of this.
Yeah, and I promise I'm not just stealing Enam's ideas. I think he hit on a lot there. I think there's a lot of fear, and I think some of that fear has been driven by either intentional or unintentional misinformation. I worry that there's, you know, we've dove, especially today, there seemed to be a dive into a lot more of the individuals that might be living on plots as opposed to the discussion about land uses, you know, some of that. So that was a little bit, I think, discouraging, but I think, again, it's rooted in fear, and it's fear of change. It's fear of loss of investment or, you know, welfare, I guess, if that's your retirement plan, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's been a lot of compassion and empathy shown for people, and I hope that continues. I don't know what the next 80% is going to bring. I think there's a lot of wild cards, and I think what we're going to see at the end of all of this is an onslaught of amendments, you know, for better or for worse. I think there's going to be an attempt to really, you know, stick handle this through so that everyone looks good in the end. Again, for better or for worse. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think you're pretty spot on with the stick handling analysis. Steve, what do you think about how things are going so far and what we might look forward to?
Well, I think it's been run fairly well from the city end of things. As far as the general vibe, I was just there for the evening session. I mean, I was there throughout the day, but I just came back from the evening session. I nearly forgot I had a thing here, and so I had to get myself moving and figure out what all that was about. In the evening, it seemed it was a little more salty in there. And again, this seems to be mostly coming from the no side. And one of the things that I'm also noticing a big difference is, and I in the past I might have fallen prey to this myself, where people can spend time attacking council and attacking their motivations and things like that. And you know what I'm remembering here is that this council is who has to get convinced to vote one way or the other. And you know, you catch more flies with honey than oil is what they say. And so it's a thing where that's something that I've noticed. And certainly in the evening time, and maybe that's what happens, either the full moon comes out or I don't know. but yeah, that is a piece of it. And certainly this evening, there was some noise in council from the audience that I've never heard in there before, as far as just, you know, crowd, some heckling, some out of place stuff that you don't hear in city council normally, for sure. So that's that. Yes, for the vibe, that's part of the vibe I think that I'm seeing.
Yeah. We'll see how it continues to go. I think it's really important here as we wrap up this recap that I encourage everybody to go and sign up. You're still able to sign up. I was just chatting with a couple people who just signed up today. They're on like panels in the 160s now, I think. But they got signed up. They're getting ready to speak and they're thinking about what they're saying. If you are not sure about what to say, I really encourage you to go back through the live stream. I think it's on the YYCCC public hearings, the YYC City Council public hearings YouTube channel. It was streamed there and you can scroll back through and listen to some of the stories that people share and some of the experiences that they share, and maybe think about how you can share your own. It's kind of an invigorating thing and an empowering thing to be able to speak at city council. My sister did it today for the first time.
Oh, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah. She said it was thrilling. She loved it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she'll go back, because you leave, no matter how simple your words are, I feel like you leave feeling like, you know what, like I made a difference in my community. And so I think it's really important that we encourage people, especially students, like students, you gotta get out there, start helping out, start building your city, because cities take decades to build. Things that are planned now are going to happen 30 years from now. The Green Line, one of my favorite projects, something I'm so excited for that I've waited my entire life for. The original study for that project was done in the 80s. And so this is taking decades and decades and decades. So if you have any inkling of what kind of city you want to live in, you need to get involved now. And you can do that this week by signing up to speak at City Hall in favor of RCG upzoning. So I hope to see everybody there. I hope to see you guys again, maybe back on another panel. We'll see where we're at. But with that, I'll just say thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow.